I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom.
What's up, Wisconsin?
Freedom, cut me loose.
Happy Monday, everybody. Hope your AC is pumping. It's an air conditioning Monday for sure.
It's an open mouth Monday. My gosh, it's like walking into an open mouth. And thank you, Greg Bach, for that imagery.
Yes, lovely. Hope everybody had a wonderful weekend. Happy Father's Day out there to all the dads. Special shout out to my dad, Mike Dawn. Happy Father's Day. I love you. Looking forward to our scheduled bike ride. We didn't get time yesterday to fit it in, so we are rain checking literally the bike riding and burger eating. It's been a really busy 2 weeks. Want to give my thanks to Matt Rothschild for stepping in for me on Thursday and Friday. It's hard to be in like three or four places at once, though I do try to, you know, break the time space continuum, it seems like, on a weekly basis. But thank you, Matt, so very much for filling in so gamely. We've been moving steadily along through Biden's top 100. We began 2 weeks ago, and that first week we really talked about economics and a lot of focus on tax. We kicked it off talking about the billionaire's tax and the fact that we should be taxing wealth in this country at the same level. So tax it just as much as, if not more than, work. Tax wealth like work, or tax it more than work. But we don't do that here. We talked about President Biden's demonstrated support for not just unions, but workers everywhere, those that actually have to work for a living and don't get to sit back, letting their wealth expand without it being taxed. We talked about strengthening the IRS through making some investments to go after the wealthiest of wealthy. We talked about monopolies and antitrust, and we talked about the corporate tax rate all in that first week. Last week was a focus on education, something that every Wisconsinite is so very proud of. I think we've all been very consistently proud of our University of Wisconsin system, which basically up until the Scott Walker times made a university education accessible no matter where you came from in the state, not just geographically accessible, but economically accessible, which was fabulous. Now, Walker and the Voss-controlled Republican legislature has made that less and less the case. But certainly, everybody in Wisconsin, we've always been a very pro-education, big educational investment state. But we focused with Tim Slickar on early childhood education and school funding. We talked about childhood poverty and how that impacts education and the incredible work Joe Biden did to basically bring millions of kids almost instantly out of poverty following COVID. We talked about vouchers with Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Talked about student loan debt and how just overwhelming that is with Scott Ross. And finally, we talked about student mental health and how incredibly important that was, certainly in part, even if unintentional, a tribute to the work that Marquette President Dr. Lovell had done for years on student mental health. It is now all the rage. He was doing it before it was cool. So here we are. It is week three of Biden's top 100. And we're going to be talking a little bit about the environment. Seems
something that we should all really enjoy. Because
yes.
I don't know if you know this, but we all live in an environment.
Yeah.
On the earth.
Yes. And we in Wisconsin love our natural resources. Ooh, just getting some fun text. Good info. Thanks, Steve from Milwaukee, texting in, letting us know that Janet Yellen just announced two new rules on closing tax loopholes. We'll have to take a look at that. More on that tomorrow.
I'm pretty sure
all.
She listened to the first week of the Biden Top 100.
Yeah, Maggie Dawn Schoen was like, I can do more there.
I can probably do that.
Yes. Maybe a carried interest loophole. Who knows? Sherry from HorrorCon, hello. If you want to text us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I wanted to jump in. We're going to talk about, for Biden's top 100, it's day 11. We're going to talk about the environment this week. Today, we're going to be talking about big oil and pipelines and drilling and all that good stuff. There are two major misnomers that I want to begin today by debunking, because these come up a lot, and it's light ragey. Rage light.
It's good. It's in conjunction with your Monday.
Uh-huh. Rage light Monday. That should be a whole thing. Okay. Here are the two things. Joe Biden increased drilling.
Huh?
Yeah. I'm going to say it again. Joe Biden increased drilling. This has led to an all-time record oil production in the United States over the last 2 years, mainly 22 and 23. I want to repeat this. Joe Biden increased the amount of drilling, and we had record oil production through 22 and 23. Why did he do this? Because of the economy, like, it's the economy, stupid, right? I'm going to say it one more time. Joe Biden increased drilling, and that led to all-time record oil production in 2022 and 2023. So the next time you have a friend that goes off on the drill baby drill, hit them with those two facts. Did you know that we had record oil production more than in any other year in 2022 and then beat that record in 2023 under Joe Biden? Fact. Next fact. He actually increased the amount of drilling. Now, the how here matters. It matters a lot. I'll talk about that. But that's mythology one I want to debunk. Myth, and this one probably I hate more than the first one.
Ooh.
Ooh, goody. There is no EV mandate. I'm going to repeat this. No EV mandate. Say it with me.
Wait,
now,
what?
Brian.
No
EV mandate.
I keep waiting for it because just like the guns being taken away and the EV mandate.
It's just it's totally you hear someone talk about an EV mandate. You say, stop watching Fox News. That is not a thing. What it is, folks. And the reason, listen, when you hear someone say EV mandate, here's what they're trying to do. They're trying to scare you by lying to you. That's what that is. There is no EV mandate. What there are increasingly strict emissions requirements. There is not going, I'm going to say this right now. This is me talking. I'm not citing anything. This is just me talking. Anybody that's alive right now that is currently of driving age, you will never, ever, 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 ever have a circumstance where you will not be able to buy a gas-powered car if you choose to. They will always be on the market. There'll be a used market. There will always be some level of production. If you're 16 right now, I don't know about the babies to 16ers, and there might be a little gray area mishmash in the middle. If you want to buy a gas guzzler for the rest of your life, and that is your jam, you will always be able to do so. But what they're trying to do, what the Biden administration is trying to do, is increase the number of hybrid and EV vehicles that American automakers are making. It's not a mandate. These are emissions targets. And they are overall emissions targets. Some of them are vehicle by vehicle, like that sort of a thing. But they're overall carbon footprint emissions targets. So Ford isn't going to stop making your Ford 350 dually exhaust thing. I don't know what I'm talking about. Please, no angry text messages. I love riding in trucks. They're fun.
They can be incredibly useful. In fact, trucks are pretty much the backbone of this entire nation if you want to get into it.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about, you know, diesel engines and pretty much, basically, unless if you really want to make a huge impact on things, let's take the trucks and turn them into electric vehicles.
So I'm going to read, this is from The Hill, March 20th. The Biden administration rule announced on Wednesday does not explicitly mandate a shift towards electric vehicles. Again, one more time. The Biden administration rule announced on Wednesday does not explicitly mandate a shift toward electric vehicles or any other specific vehicle type. Instead, it sets pollution standards for an automaker's fleet. There is no EV mandate. That is not a thing. It is a lie put out there to manipulate you, to scare people, to push regular folks, middle of the road people, to scare you, if you're an independent, into thinking that Joe Biden is some wackadoo tree hugger. He's not. In fact, a lot of climate scientists and other environmental advocates are kind of ticked off at Joe Biden because they think he should be doing more. So, like, again, there is no EV mandate. It's not a thing. They are pollution targets for an entire fleet of vehicles from an automaker. And yes, because those targets are aggressive, they're going to have to start producing more EVs, but it ain't a mandate. You'll still be able to buy your Ford 350 or whatever. Big old thing with a big old gas tank. They will exist. I'm going to take a breath. Then I'm going to dive into a little bit about what happened with the Keystone Pipeline, what Joe Biden did that was so different about drilling leases and yet allowed us to keep drilling at basically record levels. I'm Maggie Dawn. It is day 11 of Joe Biden's top 100 as we continue to debunk the baloney, bringing you some facts. Who knew? Join our conversation, 855-757-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to Civic Media. Back in a moment. I break chains all by myself. Won't let my freedom ride in. Hey, I'm going to keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
You're a lion dog-faced pony soldier.
Welcome back, everybody. Happy Monday. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's day 11 of Joe Biden's top 100. We're talking a little bit about big oil. Spent some time in the first segment debunking two myths, which I hear a lot of, which bother me to no end. That is that Joe Biden instituted an EV mandate. There is no such thing. There are pollution targets for an automaker's entire fleet of vehicles that will step in over a long period of time. Yes, this would shift production, not all of the production, some of the production, to EVs. And oh, by the way, if you are one of the people that are devoted to a gasoline-powered vehicle or a diesel-powered vehicle, no problem. Those are still going to be produced. And guess, you might see lower gas prices. Less demand.
It's almost like that's how an economy
works.
That isn't manipulated is supposed to work.
Odd. Thank you, John, from Menominee Falls. If you hear something that sounds just stupid and it's about Joe Biden, here's my tip. Go fact check it. It's a Google. It's a Bing away. It's a Yahoo if that's your preferred search engine. Because it's likely not true. There is no such thing as an EV mandate. That doesn't even make sense. The government can't tell private companies what to produce. They can try to regulate it, which is what he's doing. I digress. So frustrating. There's no EV mandate. That's not a thing. Nobody's going to be taking your gas-powered cars away, I assure you. Please, 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 rest easy. Tell all your friends. Oh, and we had record oil production under Joe Biden, more than in Donald Trump's administration in 2022 and 2023. Oh, more drilling too. Let's take a couple callers. Tom from Jackson, you've been patient, sir. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show.
Hi. I have to disagree with you on some points. I've been watching cars since the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and because of government meddling and pushing for higher and higher and higher fuel economies, cars got smaller and smaller and cheaper to the point where most of the U.S. automakers don't even sell them. You go to a new car show, there's hardly any American cars sold anymore because they gave up to the foreign cars, especially Japanese and Koreans, because they just couldn't compete.
I'm sorry, didn't the federal government bail out the three major auto companies in the United States, like actually save the industry? Wasn't that the federal government that stepped in and did that?
We're not talking about that at all. I'm talking about the...
Oh, that's interesting. Not talking about that at all. I am. You're saying that the government does nothing but harm the auto industry. It saved the auto industry. Do you think that we need to be concerned about the environment? Is that, like, can we get that as baseline?
Yes, but you know, really it's free choice. And I'm sure when I listen to you, you talk about free will and free choice. And
yeah.
The government has taken that away since the 70s and 80s. And you wonder why there's
how?
All these used
tell me how, how? Tell me, Tom, I have a question. How is government taking away choice other than for women and abortion?
Because the cars that are sold now have to meet these outrageous fuel economies.
I'm looking at a brand new Escalade outside of the studio. Did that not come from an American automaker? Can you not still buy an Escalade, a massive truck?
That has come about because years ago, all kinds of cars were around. Now they're not.
It's a brand new. Can you wait a minute? I'm just confused. Can you or can you not go buy a $70,000-$80,000 massive truck off of a lot today made by an American auto manufacturer?
Yes, and the rich can afford
okay,
it.
Okay, well, that's
folk like me. I'm looking at $20,000, $30,000, and those cars are gone. Those cars are gone.
You're saying that the only cars that are what about a used vehicle? That's not an option.
That's a different situation. We're talking new vehicles. We're talking new vehicles. And by the way, 2035 is when they plan on having no more gas-powered vehicles.
It's just not true. That's where we got to cut Tom off. I appreciate you listening, Tom. That is not what the emission standard says. No gas-powered vehicles by 2035. That is not what it says. It is an emissions target, by the way. The only freedom that has been definitively and legally rolled back by the federal freaking government in the last 20 years is my right to control my body, if we're going to be technical about it. Because Tom and I at least agree that we need to be concerned about the climate, the federal government trying to encourage and regulate vehicle emissions is a thing that everyone has agreed, except for the big oil companies who are making billions off of taxpayers' backs. They're the lobby that opposes emissions efficiencies.
I got a question. Do those foreign vehicles that outsold the American vehicles, did they have to still also fall under
weird.
Those emissions? Because I feel like...
Because isn't there an American consumer making a choice to buy that vehicle?
Because I remember back in that time when they needed a bailout, I was like, none of these idiots are making the cars that people are actually buying because people want higher fuel efficiency. That's what was going on. And instead of that, on every single commercial you ever saw were, look at more trucks. We're American trucks, American flag, American trucks. And look, I know a lot of people need... trucks. I'm not disparaging trucks, but my point is they were pushing that. They were pushing an idea of what you're supposed to be with your car rather than what actually people were trying to buy at the time. And then again, turns out, we need more money.
Well, and I always think it's really weird. And one of the ways that I've explained this or tried to explain it to folks is, hey, when you go to Walmart, do you check to be sure that your microwave is made in the USA and you buy it even though it costs $150 more than the identical microwave right next to it? No, you go buy the cheapest thing that you can that fulfills the purpose. That's a free market, by the way. It's just a globally free market. So I just don't buy the premise that there's not free choice. Consumers were buying more fuel-efficient cars, and the government was mandating that we make cars more fuel-efficient.
Wait till he finds out how much an EV vehicle costs in China, and how much they have of them, and how cheap that would be if they just were allowed to sell them here, but they can't.
One of the reasons that Joe Biden is putting some tariffs, and so is the EU, on Chinese-made EVs, because they don't want the American market flooded. They're actually trying to help the American automaker along.
Huh.
If you are on the lines, stay there. Jeff saying, all vehicles are more freaking expensive. Come on, man. Yeah, they are. I just bought one. Expensive.
I remember when it cost a nickel to have a car.
I'll give you a quarter. Call somebody who cares. Oh, wait.
And a couple more cents after that.
Yeah, that's Brian Kelly. I'm Maggie Dawn. We'll be back with more after your farm update, a little news here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere.
This is the defining challenge of our time.
Wisconsin. Happy Monday, everybody. It is day 11 of Joe Biden's top 100. Got a special guest coming up that's going to talk a little bit about, you know, what to do as a consequence of big oil's fossil fuel lies for 25 years in just a moment. But before we get there, I want to take a couple callers. I also want to read this about EV targets. This is from a major automaker lobbying group. This is the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. This is a pro-automakers lobbying group. Said this after the emissions targets were announced by the Biden administration back in March. These adjusted targets, which are still a stretch goal, should give the market and supply chains a chance to catch up. It buys some time for more public charging to come online and the industrial incentives and policies of the Inflation Reduction Act to do their thing, said a written statement from John Bozzella, president and CEO of Alliance for Automotive Innovation. And the big one, he said, the rules are mindful of the importance of choice to drivers and preserve their ability to choose the vehicle that's right for them.
So you're telling me a lobbyist for the automaker said, wow, this is really doing well to keep choice in mind for the American consumer.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
This is an independent infrastructure analyst with Wood Mackenzie. That's what they said. He said his organization's projections for EV demand are relatively in line with others, meaning there's unlikely to be a scarcity of gas-powered cars. He said the demand for gas-powered cars is only going to slow down over the near and long term. I didn't make it up.
So the people who make cars,
reading it,
they say themselves, we're not planning on doing it, not because we're told we shouldn't make more gas-powered vehicles, but the
demand goes down.
So you're saying that the carriage makers, hold on. So there are still carriage makers out there, though, right?
Yeah.
The people still have carriages, and you still
just
have
fewer of them.
Access to horses if you would like.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Just another point. Again, this is the same analyst from Wood Mackenzie. We're already at mass market with internal combustion engine vehicles. So whatever we see in the future is that prices for EVs will start to come down, may even drop below that of gas cars, but we will not expect the prices of gas cars to go above where they are today, adjusted for inflation over time.
Wow.
I don't know how to explain that.
It's almost like clearly. When, you know, a conservative law group says the election wasn't stolen, and they're the ones who normally say, that person's lying, hands on fire, hairs on fire, everything. Yes. That's crazy.
Just a couple of quick callers, and we're going to bring on my next guest. Kurt from Madison, you're on the show.
Yeah, just a quick comment. Tom, there's a difference between observing what happened in the 60s as opposed to someone who's actually in the industry, me being one of them.
Uh-huh.
Just remember, seatbelts were suggested by the government because of safety reasons. So next time you climb in a car, think about all the things that you're seeing and enjoying right now for your safety as well as comfort, which was driven by the government because management would not voluntarily do it until finally the time came along where they realized the customer base was shifting from men owning cars to women owning cars. So that's
with those jobs and things, those pesky women working outside of the home.
And here, if he really wants to learn about what the industry, how it came about, he should read how Toyota became the number one manufacturer in the world. And yes, it was they hired an American engineers to show them how to improve their manufacturing line. And they kicked our butts once it was done.
Ah, capitalism. Very strange.
It's almost like that's how everything worked.
Yeah.
That's how everything has happened.
Now, here's another analyst. This guy's from Consumer Reports, which I don't know about your people revere Consumer Reports.
Last I heard, it was the standard.
Yeah. The guy's name is Chris Harto. He said this, quote, there's a lot of room to let the market decide within the structure of these rules and for different automakers to take different strategies. These adjusted targets should still give the market and supply chains a chance to catch up. I read that before. Here it is. Here's the other thing that he said. This is Chris Harto from Consumer Reports. There's flexibility. If battery electric vehicles sales lag for some reason, auto manufacturers can deploy more hybrids or plug-in hybrids or other alternative technologies to meet the targets. It's not an EV mandate. Mark from Prairie du Sac, what do you have to say this afternoon?
Yeah, I won't get into the fact that we never should have had lead in our gasoline in the first place because lead apparently actually was damaging engines for all those decades that they insisted on putting tetraethyl lead in our gasoline, poisoning our environment. It's just ridiculous to hear these people talk about how, you know, that the oil companies, you know, we should, you know, roll back to the 1970s. Apparently, the oil companies are lying to us as far back as the 1970s that they knew that climate change was going to happen as a result of carbon emissions. That I mean, I drive right now. I'm driving a Subaru Outback, and I think that thing might have, even though it's got a foreign name on it, I think a lot of these foreign named companies are actually manufacturing their vehicles in the United States.
Yeah, that is a huge point. Thanks so much, Mark, and thanks for listening and calling. I used to live in Lafayette, Indiana. Had a bunch of friends. They worked at a Toyota plant, right? Foreign automakers, even if you buy a U.S.-made car, ask yourself, did all of the stuff in this car come from the United States? The answer is going to be no.
No.
It's just not the way
my dad sold, global trade my dad works sold for the big three when he lived out in Detroit. When we moved to Detroit, that's what he did. And he went to Mexico a lot. Whole lot.
Wonder why. Okay. Now let's bring on my very next and very special guest. I appreciate him making time. My next guest, everybody, funny, we're going to talk about extreme heat, is Dr. Ben Weston, who is the medical and health advisor for Milwaukee County. Ben, it's great to have you. Thanks for coming on the show.
It's great to be on. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. If you don't have your camera on, you can turn it. Oh, there he is.
Now, good to see you.
You don't want to deprive the viewers on Facebook, X, and YouTube of the visual of Ben. It's good to see you again, Ben. Thanks so much for being here. We're expecting to see record-breaking heat, frankly, all in pockets all across the state, but especially in Milwaukee County today and tomorrow. What are some of the things, the health impacts that folks should be on the lookout for? Do you have tips for people?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to have some hot days ahead of us, not just in the next week, but I'm sure through a lot of the summer. So there's some basic things you want to think about. There's a lot of different heat-related illness. Most of us have had a lot of those: heat exhaustion, heat cramps, heat rash, all these sort of things. But there's one to be aware of. The one that is really an emergency is heat stroke. And that's kind of what it sounds like. It's stroke. So it's cognitive. It's neurologic. So it's when you have not only that high temperature from the heat, but you also have confusion, an altered mental status along with that. So that specifically is a medical emergency. So if you have anybody around you who has that, you want to call 911. You want to start cooling them down as quickly as possible, and they need to get to an emergency department. That's the life-threatening heat illness. But we're going to see a lot of other stuff out there, cramping, skin rashes, things like that. So it's really about avoiding that heat if you can, and certainly keeping an eye on folks around you who are more vulnerable to heat illness.
Super important to be mindful of. When we start to talk about respiratory impact due to the heat, we know that as things get hotter, folks that have breathing problems are especially susceptible. We also know that we're moving into wildfire season. What should people be on the lookout there for?
Yeah, so you mentioned respiratory issues. So there's certain groups that are more vulnerable when it comes to heat. One of those is the same group that's more vulnerable with just about everything, which is our extreme ages. So very older individuals, and then the really young populations. And so those are two to keep particularly in mind when it comes to high heat. And then, like you mentioned, medical conditions. It could be respiratory conditions, cardiovascular, heart conditions, or obesity. These are things that make people more prone to heat illness in particular. And so I think what it comes down to is just like anything else, having some common sense, but also keeping an eye on your community. If it's your friends, your neighbors, your loved ones, your family, reach out. Check in on folks. We know a lot of people don't have air conditioning. A lot of people are going to be dealing with this heat in all sorts of different ways and are better at dealing it with it from a health perspective as well as everything else than others. So check in on each other, keep an eye on folks, and make sure everybody's doing okay.
What are ways to avoid, obviously drink water, try to be in a cooler environment, but if you're a worker that's outside, if for whatever reason, maybe your air conditioning goes in the fritz or you're not fortunate and wealthy enough to have AC, what are some tips that folks might be able to use to help themselves stay cool and avoid heat exhaustion, heat stroke, and the like?
Right. So certainly staying out of the direct heat. So that's going to be your midday sun. And so staying out of midday sun as much as you can. Again, easier on occupation, but keeping yourself shaded, whether it's a wide-brimmed hat, whether it's keeping your skin covered in, loose-fitting sort of clothing. Skin that's exposed, certainly you want to keep sunscreen on. We're not talking about SPF, 4 or 8 sort of sunscreen, like 30 or better sunscreen, sweat resistant, water resistant, reapplying every couple of hours. If you're getting wet and getting sweaty, with that sunscreen on. And then for folks who may not have air conditioning, if you're able to, there's a lot of places you can go to get cool. Most counties have out there cooling centers. Milwaukee County, we certainly do. Whether it's Milwaukee County or the Milwaukee Health Department, there's websites up there. Just search, cooling center in Milwaukee or cooling center wherever you live, and you'll probably find a list of cooling centers. But common places, think about libraries, think about malls, buses, senior centers. All these places typically have air conditioning and are a good place to kind of escape the heat, even if just for a little bit. And then, of course, as you mentioned, Maggie, staying really well hydrated is critical. And remember, coffee is not great hydration. Alcohol is not really great hydration. Water is great. Sports drinks, things like that.
And my favorite place to get cool, a movie theater. It is not only cool, it is also dark, and it comes with popcorn, which is the best of all possible solutions.
The perfect escape from the heat. That's right. That's right.
Thanks so much, Dr. Weston. Really appreciate you hopping on such short notice this afternoon as we get into basically our first pretty sticky heat wave of the summer of 2024. Hope you can come back sometime.
Of course. Good to see you as always. Take care.
Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. That's Dr. Ben Weston, Milwaukee County's chief medical advisor. I worked with Ben almost on a daily basis for 2 years back when COVID hit. That was a lot.
That, my goodness. I don't, I know what was going on, but Oh, my. Talk about a room full of people going, what do we do?
It was interesting. Folks, you know, like Dr. Weston and others that the county consulted with, immunologists and virologists, they had good ideas about what to do. The questions often were, well, this is what we should do. And then everybody would look at me and say, is that legal?
Well, that was the biggest question at the time, too.
Well, it's interesting because within the law, there is this very long-standing principle that especially emergency rules or emergency interventions by the government, if it is clearly trying to, in a narrow way, protect public health, safety, and welfare. Huh, isn't that public health, safety, and welfare? There's a presumption that those acts are valid. So, you know, fascinating.
Wow, that's an interesting,
government
interesting way of looking at
things. Government should promote the public's health,
wow,
safety, and well, welfare.
Just for the, I don't know, that.
Yeah.
There's so many things to say there. I almost got, they all went through the door and got stuck at the same time.
Listen, if you want to join our conversation, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We're going to finish up the conversation here for day 11 of Joe Biden's top 100. At the very least, Joe Biden didn't ask for $1 billion and promise to, you know, like give away regulations. I think somebody else did that.
Yeah, that's directly what he did.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about that and a few other things. After these brief messages, I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Ooh, how she moves. Temperature proves she certainly can. Can.
What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back. Hope you're staying cool this steamy Monday afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. He is Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. My thanks to Dr. Ben Weston, Milwaukee County's medical advisor, with some tips on how to stay cool and look out for our friends and family here in our communities across the state. We began the show by talking about two items that I wanted to debunk and sort of correct the record. There is no EV mandate. There are emissions efficiencies, standards, if you will. When I say emissions efficiencies, what do I mean? I mean, automakers have to create engines and cars that produce less emissions while still getting you from point A to point B. That is generally considered to be an efficiency. Talked about that. We also talked a bit about this idea that Joe Biden isn't drilling or lots of confusion there. Record-breaking oil production in 2022 and 2023. Let's return to that. I want to briefly talk about what happened with the Keystone Pipeline. One of the reasons the Keystone Pipeline was so controversial was because it carried tar sands oil. Okay, this is a little different. It's thicker, it's more acidic, it's more likely to leak or spill, and it's therefore more destructive if there's an accident, which happen with, frankly, regularity along pipelines. It was vetoed by Obama. The former MAGA president brought it back, and then it was killed again by Joe Biden. And the effort to install this pipeline from Canada through Montana, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas was eventually abandoned by TC Energy, the line's owner, in June of 21. Let's talk about leases and drilling because Joe Biden's approach is a little different. Trump basically wanted to and did sell a lot of leases, virtually, when I say sell, it's... You use a lease, but the lease is for an incredibly long, long period of time. It operates almost like a sale of the land. And he did this in the, what? Anyone? Anyone? The laffer curve. No, he did this in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. Yes, folks, the Arctic Wildlife Refuge. Yikes. So Joe Biden canceled the leases to energy companies, oil companies, fossil fuel companies on September 6, 2023. They were formally canceled. The Arctic Wildlife Refuge is the largest wildlife refuge in the country. And there are thousands of endangered species that live there. You know, maybe the cure for cancer is in the Arctic Wildlife National Refuge. We could get into some detail about methane emissions. The Inflation Reduction Act, for the first time, actually imposed charges or fees for methane emissions over certain levels. It's the first time we've done that. We've been doing these carbon credit programs, and they can be kind of gamed. Joe Biden also tried to clarify how the carbon credit programs are supposed, how those credits are supposed to be measured and then sold between companies. If we agree that preserving our natural resources, not just here in Wisconsin, but in the Arctic Wildlife National Refuge, if we believe that we need to do something about our environment, we need to be able to have nuanced conversations about what is actually going on, as opposed to lies like an EV mandate. If you don't like the emissions targets, what is your counter proposal? Or do you think, just no emissions targets? Let's just, whatever. Just pollute. Here is the thing. Economists call this negative externalities. It's a really fancy term. What does it mean? It means when a business produces a good that has a diffuse negative impact on a very small area, on a larger geographic region, or on the whole freaking planet, and they don't price that into the price of the good that they're selling, you know, like fossil fuels. And so what happens is demand for those products is distorted because the price is being kept artificially low because the company that is making billions and billions in profit every year doesn't actually have to address the negative impact that is felt by all of us of the production of their product. It's called a negative externality. When you assess taxes or fees, or you try to regulate emissions, it might do something to the price of the product. But what most economists, if they're being objective, will tell you is that that is a more accurate price for the product because it helps address or redress the negative consequences of that particular business on our communities. I'm hoping that was more or less clear.
Pretty much.
If the thing that you make causes harm in this country, generally we require the maker to be responsible for the harm. Fundamental principle. So too here, except not. Fossil fuel companies have been lying to you for 25 years. They have known with chilling precision, down to parts per million, their projections talked about the sort of they knew, they buried it, and they lied about it. Facts.
Sounds just like what they did with the cigarette companies.
Yes. Again, economists here are estimating that if you put the opioid epidemic plus big tobacco, it won't equal the economic and health costs of climate impacts and natural resources degradation brought about on the backs of who? Us taxpayers, to effectively subsidize the richest companies in the world. That is fossil fuel companies, big oil. A scandal of epic size proportions, if you ask me. I'm Maggie Dawn. We've got a very special guest coming up next after news, weather, and sports here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. If I don't have you,
oh. Anyone?
I have no idea. I have no idea.